Okay. So hi. I'm gonna present my dissertation work called "Improving Storage with Stackable Extensions." Thank you all for coming. Okay. So I want to start this presentation by saying that storage is everywhere. Every day we generate increasingly large amounts of data. And this data has to be stored somewhere, right? We can sometimes we store it in our laptop environment. Sometimes it goes to laptop or desktop environment. Sometimes it goes to a multi-disk server that in our companies or places of work. And sometimes it goes into a storage appliances that can also be within our companies or within some cloud provider somewhere, right? And the thing is that there are some challenges that we face when we create this data, right? As the amount of data increases, we have to maintain the performance, right? We want to provide a level of performance that is acceptable to users, and we don't want them keep waiting forever for the data to come back to them. We also want users to have reliability. We don't want them to experience data loss at any point in time. This is very important, right? You don't want to write some file today and then lose a day's work because of some error in the file system. And as these systems get bigger, power consumption is becoming a huge factor that we have to take into account, and we want these systems to provide a level of power consumption to be more energy efficient in a sense. We also want to facilitate management. We don't want an administrator to spend hours debugging what's wrong with their system, but to be able to detect problems and solve them very quickly. And we want to provide security in the sense that we want to provide access to only users who are authorized. And there are people actually that want to help with this. That's a good thing about working in storage. And some of the areas that at least I identify after reading in our group identified that we can improve is that currently data is placed on the disk with a static placement, meaning that usually when you write something to a file system, it's going to stay in that place forever and not going to. Whereas if we were to relax that condition and allow dynamic placement, moving data around so that to improve some other quality of the system, we could have systems that perform a lot better. The other thing is that we can leverage new storage devices that are coming up, right? There are SSDs are right now ubiquitous. You could find them almost everywhere. And very few systems exist on the market that leverage this SSDs in an effective way, or at least by the time that we implemented our extension. And the other thing is that we can also reduce the data footprint by having techniques like compression and deduplication. That way we need less storage, right? And however, there are some problems that we have to address first. First of all, improving storage takes time. Developing and certifying that these improvements work, it's a very time-consuming task and requires a lot of effort. Second, and it's difficult to develop in a reliable and consistent environment. For instance, most of the work that our group does is within the Linux kernel, and the Linux kernel is constantly coming up with new changes to the code base, which potentially affect the way our system works. And the other thing is that adoption of this system is slow, and that means that even if a lot of people are working on and coming up with new ideas that potentially can improve storage, still we're not seeing them being adopted in a widespread fashion, and this is somewhat yeah, this is somewhat of a letdown for us. But we believe that we can help. And in this dissertation, we have made work that allows us to improve the status quo of that. In particular, in this dissertation, we improve the state-of-the-art of block layer storage by designing and implementing self-managed block layer extensions that utilize existing and emerging technologies in new ways. I'll get into more details on that later. We create an infrastructure to simplify development of block layer extensions. And finally, we also develop a theory that simplifies deployment and management of extensions in production systems. So I'm going to go in, point by point in this dissertation. I'm going to start by the first one. And I'm going to start by describing what is a self-management block layer extension. So the first thing that we believe that extensions should be is that they should be easy to develop. You shouldn't have people spending large amount of time just coming up figuring out how would we want to develop this extension, but spending more time in just designing and implementing their actual solution than spending time in dealing with complexities of the system itself. Then we also want these extensions to be easy to deploy, meaning that you can simply take this extension once you understand how it works and plug it into a system, and it should be able to start working right away. And most of all, we want the extensions to be autonomic in the sense that they should be able to take decisions based on a system state and react to it, right? We don't want them to be interactive. We want them to improve the system by itself based on some intelligent characteristics or intelligent algorithms that it has. So in this sense, we developed three extensions. Board, the first one that improves performance by changing the disk layout, the Nexus, which lowers power consumption using a small flash device as a cache, and then EDP, which improves performance and lowers power and cost by leveraging the benefits of the multiple multiple device types. So let me go into a little bit more details into each of these extensions. So first, Borg in a nutshell. So we examined some workloads, and we saw that, and not only us, but other people have also found that there's a non-uniform access characteristics, meaning that a small portion of the data gets a large portion of the accesses. But also important is that there's usually temporal locality of access, meaning that if I access this piece of data now, there's a relatively high distribution that I will access it again in the future. And what's more important about those two is that there's what we call partial determinism, meaning that not only will I access the same data, but I usually will access it in the same way, meaning that the sequence of IOs that I issue are very similar. The patterns of IOs that I issue are very similar from every time I issue them. So taking these characteristics in mind, we design BORG, which stands for a block reorganization system. And the idea behind BORG is that it reorganizes data on a separate partition of the disk. And it reorganizes data in such a way that it improves improve the sequentiality of IOs so that IOs are now more sequential than before, and that reduces seek and rotational delay of IO requests. And we also, since we also want to limit the span of the disk arm, we assimilate writes within a separate portion of our partition so that we don't have to move the arm too much between IOs. Okay, so that's fork. Our second system is access. And access is based on the idea that these are large power-hungry devices. And this happens because disk platters are always spinning, and the OS is continuously writing data to a disk. Even if you're not, if you have an idle system, the OS is constantly going to write things to this. However, the read operations are the only ones that require immediate disk attention, because you have to retrieve the data from the disk in order for the program to keep executing. And having this in mind, we created ACCESS, which stands for an External Caching Energy Saving System, that uses an auxiliary low-power external device to persist as a persistent cache. And the idea is that it identifies popular disk and caches it, popular data that's on disk, and caches it on this external device, and then turning off the disk for elapsed periods of time, and that reduces power consumption, right? So in ACCESS, we employed some of the techniques that we also employed in BORG. We also assimilate writes on the disk as long as there is space to do it. And our third system, it's based on the idea that, again, you have non-uniform data access patterns, but more importantly, this one relies more on the bottom two characteristics. You said most of the current source systems are provisioned for peak IO load, and they're homogeneous, meaning that if you have at a certain point of time a demand for 10,000 IOs, you're going to provision to have, let's say, 100 SATA disks to satisfy those 10,000 IOs. And the other fact is that power consumption is independent of the load. Since you have those 100 SATA disks turn active all the time, they're always going to be consuming energy, right? And what we did in EDT, which stands for Extent-Based Dynamic Peering, is that we want to leverage the characteristics of multiple storage devices that are existing on the market. Namely, we want to use SSDs for random I/O, we want to use SAS or fiber channel devices for sequential I/O, and SATA for data that's idle. And besides from moving data around, we also want to consolidate data when it's idle, meaning that we want to spin down as many disks as we can. And then when the load increases, we want to load balance among the disks so that we can spread the load in a way that, so we can spread the load between the disks and get better responses. And we do this by migrating data among tiers as the workload changes. So when we develop these systems, we learn a couple of things. Right. So one of the things that we learned is that the development of this extension was a fairly complicated process. And it's complicated because of a few things, right? The first thing is that usually these extensions are programmed in the kernel, and that's a very challenging programming environment because there are many things going on in the background that you have to be aware of. There are different types of logs that you have to use, and so other things that complicate the programming process. And also, probably one of the most complicated facts is that it's not facts. It's probably the most complicated feature to achieve is providing data consistency when we're moving data. Meaning that if we're moving data from one device to another, we have to ensure at all times that data is maintained consistent. And by that, what we mean is that if a crash occurs at any point in time, that we're able to retrieve the data that as we initially wrote it, and also that the, if IOs occur to dot data being migrated, they're handled correctly. Another of the complexities that we found was dealing with non-page block or non-block align IOs. In this case, it typically requires you to separate the IOs into multiple IOs because some of the IOs may have been mapped on by the extensions in a different way and so on. So this is we usually found this to be a little tricky to deal with this correctly. And the next point is very important, and it is persistent data structure. So all the three extensions that I mentioned before rely on having an efficient indirection map that maps because all those systems, what they're essentially doing from a high-level point of view is adding a level of indirection. And in that level of indirection, you have to maintain it persistent, meaning that every time you change something, you change the location of something, you have to write it to that persistent data structure. And this proved to be quite a challenge. Finally, handling corner cases and errors were the most complicated part, and it took most of the line of code. Initially, when we developed these extensions, our code was very simple and easy to read, and by the time that we were finished, handling all the corner cases and possible error scenarios, it turns out that just handling those cases turned out to be the most of the lines of code. And the bad thing is that apart from this development complexity, there are also some administration complexity. In particular, we administrators, once that the extension is developed, they want to be able to determine the influence that a particular source extension has on a data volume. And this is not easy to do unless you know exactly what the XSearch extension is doing underneath. But also, more important is that they want to reason about what happens when you integrate more than one extension into the same source system, right? And this requires us to reason about extension aggregates. And that is very complicated, as we will illustrate later. And finally, if the administrator is able to deal with all this, he still has to deploy all this extension. And making sound deployment decisions is not a trivial choice. And in particular, because we have to ensure that, like I said, data is reliable and consistent at all times. Okay, so based on this, we created what we call the ABLE project. And the idea behind the ABLE project is to preserve the status quo of extension of both the extension development experience and the administration. The idea is that for the developer, we're going to provide an infrastructure that allows them to easily develop extensions and enable them to focus more on implementing the algorithms of the technology that they want to provide instead of worrying about how to copy data from one location to another or issue IOs in a consistent way and that sort of thing. We also provide a theory that allows administrators to reason about extensions, like dealing with some of the complexities that I mentioned before. That theory is complemented by some tools that allows the administrator to reason about extension aggregates and the influence of extensions on data volumes. And finally, we also provide some case studies and empirical analysis for some scenarios that complement the theory. Okay, so from a high-level point of view, this is what ABLE looks like. So Able sits on the kernel in the block layer, which stands between the file system and the I/O scheduler. Able has an I/O router, which essentially intercepts all IOs and passes all the IOs through the extensions that are in the stack. Then those extensions can use all the primitives of that Able provides via the IO library, resource manager, extension register, border profiler, device manager, or extension profiler, and to enable the administrator to reason about the system, we provide the reasoning engine that essentially allows you to infer behavior of the system when and look at infer behavior of the system when you plug in a new extension. Okay, so the API that Able provide is depicted here. There are many different calls, but right now I just want to focus on this one, copy blocks. So as I mentioned before, one of the challenges that we faced when implementing the extension was how do we consistently migrate data, right? So let's assume that here we're going to migrate data from B1 to B2, right? We're migrating blocks B0, B1, and B2. B0 we have migrated, B1 we're in the process of migrating it, and B2 is going to be migrated sometime in the future after B1 completes. Okay, so what happens if an I/O comes and that I/O is for blocks B1, B0, and B2? What happens if that I/O is a read or a write? Okay, so let's look at the read scenario first. If that I/O is a read, what's going to happen is that since B0 already completed to the destination device, we're going to issue it to the destination device. For B1, there are some cases here. Since it's marked as currently being migrated, that migration, it's a two-step migration, right? First, we have to read the data from D1, and then we have to write it to D2. If the data has already been read, then we can simply return, we already have the data, and we can simply return it and mark the B1 part as we already have it. If the data hasn't been read, we will wait for that read to complete. Yeah, essentially that. And then get the data. And then for B2, we have to issue the read operation to the source device, right? So essentially, the I/O ends up splitting multiple pieces and will look something like this. The write scenario is quite different, because in the write scenario, what we're going to do is that we're going to write everything to the destination device, D2, and then what we're going to do is that for the block that we're currently migrating, when the read completes, we're going to discard that data because we have new data here. And if we had already issued a write I/O to B1, then there's no problem because this I/O is going to be queued after that I/O, so we're just simply going to overwrite that one. And for B2 that was marked as kind of migrated in the future, we'll simply mark it as migrated already. Right? Okay, so yeah, so this is what the copy blocks function does. So what we did then is that we took all the extensions, some of the extensions that we had before, particularly block and access, and implemented some other new extensions. And here we have the reduction in lines of code, right? So what this number indicates is that from the vanilla version to the new Able version of the extension, For the case of the simple array, we were able to save 76% of the lines of code, meaning that the able version code was 76% smaller than the vanilla code. But what's more important is that when we look into the number of lines of code that are intrinsically kernel code, we see higher amounts of code reduction. Right? In particular, for the RAID 1 extension, again, which is the one where we saw the highest benefit, we see that we were able to reduce almost 90% of the lines of code, of the kernel lines of code. And even for the case where we reduce the least amount, which was for encryptor extension, it was 20%, which is not a bad number. So in summary here, for the benefit for the able provide for developer, we see a significant reduction in lines of code. That reduction is even higher in kernel lines of code. And the good thing is that we had a very little overhead, 4.5% in the worst case. It's not shown here, but it's in the dissertation if you're interested.
Why is the reduction more pronounced in, especially the simple array that it uses all those for copy?
In the simple array? Well, first of all, because RAID in itself is a very simple mechanism. What a RAID 1 does is that it mirrors two IOs and it should send to different devices.
Mm-hmm.
So the able infrastructure provide a mechanism that allows you to create a safe copy of an IO, and that's what takes most of the kernel lines of code, issuing that IO safely and ensuring that those complete in time before you report the IO, right? And able provides that the API provides calls that does that.
So in general, in able you identify the basic operations most of the kernel developers do.
Yes.
Right? And
mm-hmm.
you provide those function implementation of those.
Yes, exactly.
Okay,
so now when it comes to the administration part, so I've been talking to you and mentioning that able provides a what we call an automated reasoning based on a sound theory that helps make stacking decisions based on high-level goals. So these high-level goals are, for instance, performance, reliability, power consumption, and all that. And the way that Able accomplishes this is that it looks at interactions between extensions, right? So before, what developers did is that they develop extensions and indicated what higher level goal they accomplished. And Able takes this into account and looks at the IO volumes the extension is going to use, and based on that, it reasons about how that extension will act when deployed. So let me give you a more concrete example to make this more to illustrate how this works. Assume we have two extensions. First, an IO shepherding extension, which improves reliability by retrying failed IOs, and then the SS extension, which I just mentioned before, that saves power by caching data on a low power device and spinning down disk. When we deploy this, there are two possible options. We can put either IO shepherding extension and able and access beneath it, or we can put the access above and IO shepherding below. Right? Let's assume that the extensions are set up in this fashion, meaning that this means is that the IO shepherding extension will look at all the IOs that are issued to the disk, and the IOs that it issues will always be to the disk. The access extensions will look at IOs that are issued to the disk and then issue IOs either to disk or flash. Right. Okay, so let me illustrate how this will work. So we will have three types of IOs. The normal arrow means regular IOs, dash arrows means IOs issued by access, and the gray arrow means IOs issued by I/O shepherding extension. So what's going to happen is that I/Os will come initially to the I/O shepherding extension. Those I/Os will be forwarded to the Express extension. For I/Os that fail, the I/O shepherding extension is going to retry some of those I/Os, well, not some, but retry the I/Os that fail. And then Access is going to forward those I/Os to the disk. But additionally, Access will copy data from disk to flash, incurring in its own I/Os. And then, since some data is transferred from disk to flash, eventually Access is going to issue I/Os to the forward I/Os that were issued by the I/O shepherding or the regular system to the flash. Right, so at the end, we will have a behavior that will look like this, meaning that some I/Os will go to this, some I/Os will go to the flash device, and I/O shepherding I/Os might go to either of them, meaning that I/Os that you issue to either of the devices you will be ensured that they're reliable, and but you will also be able to save power consumption because Access is going to potentially turn off the disk when it's not in use and all that. When you stack them on the different order, meaning that if you stack Access above I/O shepherding, what you're going to see is that initially Access is going to take some of that I/O traffic and it's going to redirect it to the flash. And then we're only going to see that the I/O shepherding is going to be effective for only part of all the initial I/O stream, because there's a big portion of the I/O that are going to be redirected to the flash device. So what this allows us to infer here is that in this case, both extensions are doing their job, whereas in this case, reliability is giving the more priority than power saving. Whereas in this case, power saving is more important than reliability because we're only ensuring reliability for a portion of the I/Os that go to the disk. Okay, so the exacting rules enable the administrator to infer that type of knowledge about extension behavior. And the way that they work is essentially by the process that I just did, but from a theoretical point of view. they reason based on the input and output of individual extensions, which is what I just described through words to you, and the theory and what they're able to reason about is what we call extension dominance, meaning which is the extension that will dominate given a particular stacking order, right? Okay, so this stacking rules enable the administrator to infer a significant amount of knowledge about extension behavior, but they don't allow us to decide what to do in all scenarios. For instance, what would happen if the administrator were given two or more extensions that accomplish the same goal, and he has to pick to deploy one of them? What do you do in this scenario? So, in particular, let's say we have two different extensions available to us. One extension does caching, and one does steering. From an abstract point of view, the way caching works is that I/Os are issued from memory to, and will always go to the SSD. If that content is not present on the SSD, then you will look into the hard disk. Steering, from an abstract point of view, what it does is that the I/Os will go from memory, and since data is will be written in either SSD or a hard disk, you will be able to choose then where you want to issue where the I/O is going to be issued to.
So I think it is a basic difference that you guys used to argue about what is testing and tiering. So in tiering, there is no redundancy.
Well, the thing is that there's a gray line. I mean, this is the way I see it, right? But then there are many variants. You can say that are the tiers exclusive or stuff like that. And then here you can argue. I mean, there are many variants of each of those systems.
So in Cassie, surely the copy will reside on the ACD, right? In Cassie.
You will always have a copy on the ACD.
Like,
yeah. In tiering, that's not a requirement.
I think I have some questions like the slide before, like the Able project itself.
Mm-hmm.
So how is an administrator going to use the Able project? Like, let's say it's a core extension, it has,
mm-hmm.
wants to use, so what it needs to do to that, and it has this one priority. So what it needs to do is that, like, it gives all the components to the Able framework, and Able framework will determine automatically.
Yeah, so essentially what it will do is that it will say, okay, you have four extensions,
mm-hmm.
and if you want to deploy all of them and have a certain goal, what's going to do is that it's going to look through all the possible stack orders and see which one will allow the administrator to accomplish the goal.
How do you say the goals? Like, goals in terms of abstract words? Or like
abstract words, yeah. Yeah, I mean, when you develop an extension, you say, okay, this is for improving performance or reliability or compressing data, right? Space efficiency, power saving, that type of
all those extensions.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and in this, with this part of the work, what I'm doing is to say, okay, sometimes you have two extensions that do the same thing, right? That they say both that improve performance.
Mm-hmm.
So which one do you choose? Right, that's something that the previous theory doesn't allow us to handle, because the previous theory it works from a very abstract point of view. But when you get down into the practicalities of the internal workings of each extension, then you will have to go into a more complete empirical analysis and see how they work.
Yeah, I think it would be nice to have sort of a workflow of what the administrator would need to do to use Able, right?
Okay.
So, for instance, you could say that first, let's say the administrator has a set of volumes,
mm-hmm.
that they're managing, and they're considering to deploy, say, three extensions. Then if that's the scenario, then what are the steps that the administrator would need to take?
Okay.
It would be nice to have a high-level workflow. You know, what are the steps?
Okay.
So, for instance, things like they have to define the input and output domains for each
mm-hmm.
extension. For every volume, they need to define what is the goal.
Okay, so probably I can rearrange that example and put it in that way.
Yeah.
No, I think the example is good, but...
Example is good. Don't touch that. I think that's...
Yeah, the thing is that if I put too much... I mean, I'm already, like, very tight on time.
Okay. Why don't you continue,
okay.
and then we can talk about this.
Okay. Okay, so essentially we have these two systems, and we want to compare them. And, okay, yeah, I said this. Okay, so what we want to do is that we, by providing an empirical methodology, we want to provide an empirical methodology to select which extension to deploy. And we do this in a two-step fashion. First, we look at the sensitivity that each extension has to how it's configured. Its internal how internal parameters of its configuration affected, and then we look at the performance of the extension under the workload that it's going to be subjected to. Right. So in particular, in this case, in terms of the sensitivity analysis, we're going to look at from caching and tiering point of view. We're going to look at the chunk size influence and the caching and tiering algorithm. And for caching, we're additionally going to look at the policy, the write policy, meaning write through or write back, and the influence of the cache size, And in the tiering side, we're going to look at the influence of the epoch length, meaning how long is the time span between when you rearrange the content of the SSD. Okay, so in terms of the caching, we tested two algorithms, MQ, which is a caching algorithm specifically designed for storage workloads, and LRU, which is least recently used, that is the probably one of the most common and simple caching algorithms that exists. We see here that MQ performs it performs better for both of the workloads that we looked at, FIU and MSR. In terms of the cache size, what we saw was very simple. It's that simply bigger caches will always guarantee a higher hit ratio. For the write policy, we tested write back and write through. We didn't find any conclusive evidence on which one is better, but more details of that are on the dissertation. And for the chunk size, what we did is that we estimated the hit ratio, and I'm going to go through on how we estimated that. So the idea here is that we start with a given I/O sequence, right? Let's say this one, ADB, AAT, B. And then what we're going to do is that we're going to calculate the reuse distance for every I/O. What I mean by reuse distance is the time, the number of I/Os that occur between two instances of the same, two accesses of the same block. So for instance, from the time that the reuse distance between this A and this A is 3, right? 1, 2, and 3. From this B to this B is just 1, right? And so on. So when we calculate that for each I/O, we obtain something like this. We see that for that particular sequence, we see that we have a reuse distance of 1 occurs one time here, BB, and a reuse distance of 3 occurs twice, right? The one that we counted for this sequence of A to A and for this sequence of B to B.
So Jorge, here you're using a non-standard definition of reuse distance.
Yes.
So you might want to use a different term, because reuse distance of between A and A is just 1, because only the unique axis is between the
I should say relaxed reuse distance.
Yeah.
Is what I use in the dissertation.
Yeah. Because otherwise, you're redefining terminology, which is not a good thing.
Yeah, okay, I'll do that. And then what we do is that if we plot this in a cumulative fashion, we see that we will get something like this, right? Meaning that this is what we will get. So a curve depicting the hit ratio and then the reuse distance will act as our cache size, meaning that if we had a cache of X amount of elements, we would get a hit. Okay, so we use this method to estimate the reuse distance for the MSR workload, and we found that surprisingly bigger chunks led to higher hit ratio. Right, this is somewhat unexpected because if we look at here, we see that on the x-axis we have the cache size and on the y-axis we have the hit ratio. That the lowest curve is actually the 4 kilobyte page curve, and the highest is the 1 megabyte curve. Right, so meaning that let's say for a cache of 1 gigabyte, using 1 megabyte lines will achieve something like 90%, and using 4 kilobyte lines will achieve something like 20% hit ratio. And but why does this happen? I mean, this is somewhat unexpected. And the reason that we found that this happens is because of spatial locality. And let me show you a little bit more in detail into this. In this plot, we have inter-IO distance on the x-axis, meaning that if I have the distance between this IO and the spatial distance between this IO and the next IO is the big picture on the x-axis, and it's plotted as a commutative fashion. And and by that we have meaning that we will have the percentage of IOs on the y-axis. So what we see here is that only about 10% of the IOs are issued to the exact next 4 kilobyte page. And if you go, but then when we looked at the 1 megabyte span, we see that more than 60% of the IOs will fall under that. Meaning that essentially if we catch a 1 megabyte line, 1 megabyte chunk, sorry, then what we're going to have is that essentially we're going to have some hits because of prefetching. Some hits are going to be due to to content that was already fetched, instead of misses to IOs for content that was not on the cache. Okay, so this concludes the analysis for the caching. So now from on the tiering side, we tested two algorithms, a greedy IOPS-based algorithm and another one that is a sensation-based algorithm. And in both cases, with and without problem in detection, just as the one that we implemented for EDP. The results for this are on the paper, but essentially we found that, as suspected, utilization with problem detection was the best combination. We also tested epoch lengths with different lengths of epochs, and here I have the distribution of IO times for the different epoch lengths. So these are what are depicted here are the quartiles, meaning this is the 5th percentile, the 5th percentile, and this is the 95th percentile, and this is the 25th, 50, and 75 percentiles. And what we see here is a trend that says essentially if the longer your epoch, the smaller your 50th percentile will be. However, we also see that the 95th percentile is growing when you go from 30 to 60 minutes, meaning that even though that a big portion of the IOs are completing faster, there's also another the worst 5th percent of the IOs is performing significantly worse. Therefore, in the rest of the experiments, we're going to use 30 minutes. Okay, so and in terms of the chunk size analysis, what we saw is that smaller chunks will lead to better performance, right? So here, in this figure, we have also service time on the x-axis and plotted as a cumulative fashion. We see the 1 megabyte curve being the superior one that is always above the both 4 and 16 megabyte chunks. However, the flip side of this is that smaller chunks will also lead to more metadata, and that's something that we have to be wary of. Okay, so now that we looked at the sensibility for each of the extensions, our next step was to compare both extensions on different dimensions, right? So, and then these are the 5 different dimensions which we chose: workload adaptability, how fast they adapt to workload changes, how how best do they leverage the different devices that they have? How effective is their use of the SSD? Because as we know, for instance, SSDs are good for random IOs, but for random reads, but not for random writes. What's the metadata overhead that each of the extensions incurs? And what is the reliability concerns that we will possibly have to be aware of? Okay, so in this presentation, I'm only going to talk about the first two, but I invite you to read about the other three in the dissertation. Okay, so in terms of workload adaptability, we conducted two experiments. The first one using long-term trends, and the second one having a change in the working set. So the way that the long-term trends experiment worked is that we essentially had a week-long trace, and we trained the system with the first 5 days, and then looked at the sixth day, ran the system in the sixth day, and see what the performance was like. In the change in working set, what we did is that we trained for a smaller period of time. I think it was 2 hours, and then ran other 6 hours to see what happens. So for the long-term trends, we see that caching performed better than tiering. This was a little bit unexpected, at least for me, because the idea behind tiering is essentially to capture long-term trends. And in the change in working set, we saw that the performance for 1 megabyte chunks for tiering was very comparable to the performance of caching for 1 megabyte chunks. Right? We see it right there. Okay. And in terms...
Are you going to say why?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so the idea here is
and
that...
the previous one is the long-term trends. I mean, that's more...
Yeah. So in the long-term trends, what happens is that that even though tiering is supposed to capture better those long-term trends, caching still does quite a good job. I mean, the caching, the MQ caching algorithm was exactly designed for that, to capture storage, long-term storage trends. So so even though caching is not, it's usually designed to deal with immediate effects, what this shows is that if you have an algorithm that is specifically designed for storage workloads, it will perform as good or even better, as we see here, than algorithms that are just designed for storage, like tiering algorithm, right? And yes, so and in terms of the change in the working set, what we see is that what happens is that caching incurs in a lot of misses, and each of those misses, you have to fetch a 1 megabyte chunk of data before you're able to continue. Whereas in the tiering case, if it's just going to say, okay, the data is on the disk, let's issue it to the disk. And then at some point, it will once an epoch passes, it reconfigures and says, okay, this chunk of data got too many IOs for this, let me put it on the flash, right? So in a sense, what's happening in this scenario is that the fact that caching does migrations in flight is hurting the performance when there are a lot of changes. Because the chunk size is very big.
So you're saying there is more IO activity introduced because of the caching in line activity.
In line activity, yes.
And that in line activity is primarily to the SSD, right? Or even both. Eviction to the disk.
It's both, yeah. The worst case is when you have evictions, yeah, because you have to put it on the disk and then fetch it, and I mean, put the write the data to the disk and then read another 1 megabyte chunk and write it to the SSD.
So, I mean, I'm also curious, so that, I think it's sort of convincing. I mean, is there also another explanation there with respect to load balance? Load balance across the two device types?
No.
And the first...
No, and the next slide, I'm going to say why.
And the first one, I mean, you said that MQ can capture long-term trends,
mm-hmm.
and this is 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have to tune MQ in any way?
Well, the authors of the MQ paper already did that for me. Yeah, so they analyzed storage workloads and came up with some configuration parameters that were suitable for this type of workloads, and I just reused them. And actually, I think they looked at month-long traces in that paper.
I mean, and the other question then is, can tiering do any better than what you've done?
Of course.
Right.
Yeah, tiering,
the
yeah.
same question for caching as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tiering.
It could be that you're comparing a substandard implementation of tiering with a really good implementation of caching.
Sure, I mean, yes, but that's not what I want. With this study, what I wanted to compare were two perfect implementations.
Just any two.
Yes, any two implementations, because my goal is to compare two extensions and different and distinguish between them which one will perform better on their particular scenario.
That's good. I think that message needs to be brought up somewhere while you're presenting all of this, maybe even
okay.
up front, to say, okay, here are two extensions,
mm-hmm.
and we're not claiming that they're the best possible implementations. But given that they have certain properties that we can empirically evaluate, here's how we do it.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I'll follow the first slide.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so going back to, so here I have what a plot that essentially says what is the average response time per device. And here what it's saying is that essentially caching has a higher higher average response time for both IOP issued to the SSD and to the hard drive, particularly the hard drive. However, when we looked at the hit ratio, we see that 97% of the IOs are issued to the SSD. And in this case, it's 75 versus 25. And the IOs that are issued to the SSD in this case responded more quickly than the overall performance turned out to be a lot better for caching than for tiering. Because a lot more IOs were, this only accounts for 3% of the workload. So in a sense, this is the tail of the distribution, right? And whereas in this case, this accounts for 25% of the workload. So to summarize our findings with the extension comparison, we found that tiering can adapt as quick as caching, but we'll have to tune the chunk size to be very small, and that incurs in a big metadata overhead. Caching can, in some cases, oversubscribe the SSD device, although we didn't show it here. There are some studies that show this. However, we believe that as SSD perform, caching, the performance is... of caching systems will also improve with them, right? Because it's trying to essentially send more IOs as it can to the SSDs. And finally, one disadvantage that caching has is that it moves a lot more data, right? So and those movements of data require you to have to be very careful about when you update mappings on the system, right? Okay, so this concludes my work. So now I'm going to summarize my contributions. So we presented three storage extensions that showcase performance, power, and cost savings. We also presented an infrastructure to simplify the extension development process, and a mechanism to easily manage persistent data structures. It's not shown in this presentation, but it's shown in the dissertation. We also provided a theory to reason about storage extension stacking, and an empirical methodology to compare and contrast storage extensions that complements that theory of extension stacking. So, in terms of future directions, right now all the work that I did was based on centralized storage. In the future, what I want to do is that I want to look at different storage architectures. So what happens when storage is not all centralized in one place, but it's distributed, right? We could have mixed architectures where we have some disk in storage arrays and then flash on the host, for instance, or we could have a completely distributed architecture where both disk and flash are on host. So how would caching and tiering systems behave in or change to accommodate for these different architectures? What about how do you maintain persistent data structures and persistent mappings when you move everything towards a more distributed architecture? And those are some of the challenges that I would like to continue to explore in the future. And with this, I conclude by acknowledging my committee members, Raju Rangaswamy, Himavinda Pucha, Ming Zhao, Jinpei Wei, and Kauchi Dutta, and also my collaborators and co-authors. And here's a list of my publications. Here are some of the references that I used on the presentation, and thank you. And that's it. Okay.
What can I do? Yeah. Yeah. Well, it took a total of 1 hour, but we had questions in between.
Yeah.
It's quite okay.
So I have some comments and questions. So I guess we can go with the questions first.
Okay.
Okay. Let me see, because I have all mixed. Okay. One thing I didn't understand was in the ABLE, you compare lines of code with kernel lines of code. I didn't understand the difference between the two.
Okay. Okay. So difference between kernel lines of code and okay. So yeah. So basically, lines of code is everything. Right, so some of the extensions, for instance, had components that needed to be in the kernel, like those to issue IOs, and those some that don't need to be in the kernel, like typical the algorithms that the extension implements. So that doesn't need to be in the kernel. So that's, and I account for kernel lines of code only those that are required to be in the kernel.
The other thing is that you said that ABLE had an overhead of 4% or something in the worst case. I didn't understand what overhead was that. Was CPU overhead or was...
Yeah, it was runtime overhead.
Runtime overhead. So on top of... So you have to add 4% in, let's say, execution time or latency, I don't know,
in the worst
whatever
case.
You're running. Whatever you're running.
Yeah, in the worst case, okay. Yes.
The other thing is that...
So that was the very, very worst case.
Okay.
So you might want to clarify that.
Yeah.
In the worst case versus average case.
Yeah, I mean, that was just one case where it was really, really bad. But okay, I'll clarify that.
Yeah, I was more concerned about what kind of overhead it had, more than the 4% itself. The other thing is that you mentioned that for RAID 1, you can have a lot of benefits in terms of code.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, so my question was, does that include the code for reconstructing the RAID if some disk is gone or not?
No, that didn't include it, but I think even if you include it, it shouldn't be much, because Able provides all the functionality to reconstruct, because you all just have to copy data, make sure and update a mapping thing in what stage you are of the reconstruction. So it's,
but in any case, okay, so in the case of the vanilla RAID, you are counting the code of reconstructing the RAID?
No, well, I said it was simple RAID 1, and it was simple exactly because it doesn't account for the code to reconstruct.
Even vanilla?
Even vanilla, yeah.
Okay.
Neither of them.
Okay. And the other thing is that you mentioned that with 1 megabyte size request, you have better speed ratio.
Mm-hmm.
So my question was, this seems to be handled by prefetching. Let's say that you have 4K I/O normal, but then you have prefetching on top of that. Do you compare that 1 megabyte with 4K prefetching, for instance?
But 4K prefetching is not going to do anything,
well,
like I showed there, because.
So you try prefetching.
So let me go back to.
It's the same thing as 1 megabyte.
Yeah. So
size.
Yeah. So if you 4K, if you prefetch the next 4K, as you show here, you only have a 10% probability that you're going to hit it.
I see.
I think what Lewis is saying, 4K chunk size plus arbitrary prefetching.
Yeah.
Like large.
So that's arbitrary prefetching, yeah, it's going to have the same effect.
The same thing.
I see.
If you have 4K plus 1 megabyte prefetching, it will behave the same way as 1 megabyte chunk size.
Okay.
But if you use, the only thing is that if you use 4K plus 1 megabyte prefetching after that, you're going to incur the overhead, is the same overhead in terms of metadata as if you had 4K. Chunks, whereas if you just use 1 megabyte chunks, you have what? 6 orders of magnitude less metadata.
I see.
It's more like 3. Kilobyte versus
Kilobyte, yeah, you're right, yeah.
Yeah.
3 orders of magnitude.
I see. I thought was something else. For instance, in this case, something that you have that prefetching won't have is that in this case, you're also prefetching your previous slots,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you have locality, probably you jump back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Which is something you don't have in prefetching.
Good point.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that, I guess that was all my questions.
Mm. Ricardo, do you have any questions?
No, the empirical methodology there, you show very interesting numbers and everything, but I really don't see how Able helped you any of that. So, I understand that you should show those numbers, but I don't think this is the best place to show it. And I mean, because the focus should be about how Able helps you,
mm-hmm.
you know, finding these parameters, finding what to compare, how to compare them, and all that. And then maybe you should.
No, the thing is that, that's the issue that it's, I mean, Able will not show you how to compare them. That's the problem.
So what's the point of talking about that in this implementation? What's Able helping you in doing that? I mean, the only difference is that you mentioned this caching routine as extension, but besides that.
No, well, the idea is that, so, I mean, there's this problem that Able solves, and then there's this one that Able doesn't solve. And for the one that Able doesn't solve, how would you go and solve it by yourself? Right? So that you can have the full circle.
But I think those parameters are not generic. Like, you have to come up with your own parameters where Able can't help you.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I'm saying.
So shouldn't make more sense for the presentation to show things more what Able's able to do for you in some cases instead of what you did by hand, because Able wasn't able to help you? I mean, that would be, yeah, but on the other hand, I mean, you should trust those banks. Because those are very good banks. So, I don't know. Okay.
To me, I was a little confused, like when you jump from able to cashing and fear.
Yeah, me too.
So it feels like force.
Should be a simple adjustment.
So I don't know. I mean, it's actually very interesting data, I think, but I don't know. It seems to me like it doesn't belong to the presentation, at least the way it is right now.
Okay, so here's what I think. I think I completely agree that the jump from the ABLE theory to this empirical evaluation was a bit abrupt in the presentation, and maybe it is like that even in the current version of the thesis.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but at least in the thesis there is more space, and you talk about some of the shortcomings of ABLE in more detail, whereas mm-hmm. you could not in this presentation. Right, I think what would be useful is to have maybe a couple of slides that help with that transition. And for instance, you sort of had one slide, maybe not even one slide, half a slide on what the ABLE theories app is able to accomplish, right? In terms of just the raw power of the theory itself, right? So you could expand on that a little bit more, but following that, you could talk about what are the shortcomings of the theory in more specific terms, right? What you cannot do with ABLE, right? And you can at least the current version of ABLE, right? So. And then after that, to me it seems logical to continue that exploration to figure out how you could answer some of the questions that ABLE is not able to answer by expanding the framework. So the question is, how do you expand the framework to try and answer those questions which you currently cannot answer, right? To understand how to expand that framework, you went about understanding how extensions behave in a more deeper fashion and how you can contrast them beyond the high level abstraction of the extension dominance over input and output domains, right? So I think if you set it up nicely,
okay,
then you could actually talk about all the things you had in the final part of the presentation.
Okay.
And then you need to sort of tie that back into, after you finish this, you need to tie that back in to say, okay, here is what we found by comparing these extensions, and what you anticipate or what you speculate could be possible extensions to the ABLE theory that will allow you to compare such extensions. Is it possible or is it not? I think that's the answer that's missing. And if you answer that question in some reasonable way, either by saying, well, it's absolutely not possible, or by saying that here are some ideas that we think are extensions to this dissertation and can expand the scope of the ABLE framework, and that would be a nice complete story. But I agree that right now that part or the latter part seems substantially disconnected, and that's why it doesn't seem as part of this presentation to some people. So if you complete that loop, then with maybe two or three additional slides, and perhaps even if you want, you could eliminate some of the slides in the final part of the presentation, show less data or something, and just summarize the data.
Okay.
I think would be good. So does that help to address that?
Yeah.
To connect, to integrate this last part? It's because the goal of this whole process, although we were probably not successful in achieving that goal, is to see if the theory can be improved.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be good to reach a conclusion to that, or at least, it may be the wrong conclusion for now, but that's what you managed.
Yeah.
To come up with.
At the beginning of the presentation, when you say, that ABLE is sort of libraries and managers and all that, you then talk about an example, you know, copy data example.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in case you don't have time or for more slides and things like that, you should just remove that. That example didn't.
No, actually,
I
you guys are doing this every day, right? And there are a lot of people in the audience who don't do it every day. For them, it would be useful to understand what sort of problems does Able address. And that's actually a very good example, I thought. I mean, I think,
okay.
You know, that's a non-trivial
example.
Actually,
I added that example because I had a comment.
Yeah.
Like what you just
otherwise,
said
otherwise, it's very high level, right? Okay, there's a lot of things going on inside the kernel, and it's all very hard, and here's an infrastructure that helps, you know, magically solve all that.
Okay.
I think an example, one specific point of that whole space as to what is actually changing is very good. And I like the example that you chose because it's also simple. It's not too complicated. Mm-hmm. You didn't talk about, you know, SMP and multiple firing of interrupts and fine-grained locking and that sort of stuff is hard to put in a presentation, right? But you chose something which was understandable, so I like that. It makes it more concrete.
Okay. It didn't do much for me.
It won't.
Yeah.
It won't, and
yeah.
I don't expect it would do
yeah.
anything for any of you guys, but it will for everyone else in the audience.
Well, then I have a couple of details. Like you should have a spell checker because there are a bunch of titles.
Okay.
Mythology. You wrote mythology more than one. And that there is this word that I, you know, able perturb.
Able what?
Perturb.
No,
perturb.
You don't like that.
No. It was. You know, I couldn't. I was yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's changeable.
I hate that word. I don't know if
able what?
Perturb.
Disturb.
Yeah.
It's more like disturb.
Yeah. I don't know, it's something personal.
You don't like that word?
Yeah.
It's like you hate it.
Now, the thing is that in Spanish we say easily perturbar, right? But in English, somehow, like, you know, strange.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I was just thinking what you said.
It's the same word. Okay, I'll change it. Don't worry.
At least Ricardo will be happy.
Yeah.
One suggestion: whenever you show a figure, you should have a very little introduction about what the y-axis is, what the x-axis is, because
mm-hmm.
in many cases I didn't have
yeah.
any idea what was going on.
Yeah. At some
yeah.
point I forgot to do that. Yeah, I have to remember to do that.
You're rushing out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? I think you could remove the details of org or EBT too much. I mean, you can just
yeah.
put it in the same slide.
I agree.
Okay.
In fact, you could just have that one slide that you had and talk about them
like
without having the next three slides.
Okay.
Like a tail of three extensions and
yeah.
talk about that.
And then you just talk about that, you know, make sure that you watch your time. Don't go over 1 minute right, on that slide.
Okay.
And then say, I mean, more than the extensions themselves, you talk about what are the common aspects of those extensions, because that's what is driving or motivating the next part of your presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you already have a slide for that, a separate slide.
Yeah.
So you could directly jump into that.
Okay.
I guess I see that just have a comment, but I don't remember what it is. It says, the explanation of static data placement is too deep.
Okay.
Know.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I talked too much about that.
Okay. I also have some our comments. So in the first slide. Slide you talk, I don't know if I probably missed it, but
okay.
in the performance of the, you talk about the performance of the disk and how bad is it. So probably you can mention that it's the only mechanical part of the machine. So it's, you know.
What first slide?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I think
okay,
the
anyway,
first
the first slide.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I understand that there are a bunch of first slides in there. Okay. Right. right? I think this comment doesn't make sense. The other thing is that you mentioned about the problem of programming the kernel. I think you can summarize that with high concurrency. I think you use something else, some other words.
Right. I use some other words. Well, I use concurrency somewhere.
But when you say, you know, the challenge of programming the kernel is, I think, can be summarized in high concurrency, right?
Right. So here I have exactly that comment, and I say there are at least three things, right? One is that there is an existing complex code base that you have to understand before you can do anything in it. Second is that you have multiple contexts, process as well as interrupt, right? It's a highly concurrent environment. That's the third thing. And four is that with multi-core, you also have additional concurrency.
Right.
So those are, I think, the complexities. Better to be more concrete so people understand why it's so hard. I mean, for people who haven't programmed in the kernel don't really know that. So it's important to spell it out.
Another comment I had was that you called ABLE, that's why we developed the ABLE project. I was wondering if framework was a better word. After all, it's a framework, right? Where you can frame all.
Yeah, so the ABLE project creates a framework. Okay.
Yeah, but I have to send ABLE. I never.
You also talked about the architecture of ABLE. For me, it was a little bit heavy, but I don't know how important is that in the presentation.
The architecture, my suggestion was to animate it. Okay. So that, first of all, that allows people to, for instance, that's a nice way to talk about the storage stack itself without ABLE. Right, so that people get a sense for what, you know, is the broader context for your dissertation, and then bring ABLE in, and with some motivation and animate it. I think that will help you also logically follow through in your explanation.
Also, in the your example of ABLE, where you have the aisle shepherding. So I think you didn't mention aisle shepherding before that, right? So I was thinking, okay, why don't you use some of the extensions that you already mentioned, so you don't have to, you know, introduce a new one, for example, for just example. So, for instance, you can easily replace aisle shepherding with the encryptor, and I think that would work as well.
Well, no.
I remember in some presentation you used that example. Said something like you could put encryptor here or here, you encrypt both the SSD and both this.
Or is there that example?
Yeah, I could possibly use encryptor.
Yeah, I guess you could do that easily.
But encryptor, yeah.
It does the same thing, right?
Not quite, because encryptor doesn't.
Encryptor modifies the string.
But I think it's easier for people, for instance, to understand that things in SSD and disk are encrypted, or just in disk and not in SSD, right?
Right, it's the same thing actually. You can easily switch out. You'll have to. You'll even get rid of some arrows, I think.
Yeah.
And save time.
Okay.
And I have another comment. Okay, in your example of the indirection to copy the writes, to copy blocks in ABLE. You mentioned how a read handle, and you also mentioned how a write handle, which basically you just write to the destination, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I have a question there. What happens if you are partially writing a block?
That was in my example.
Let's say that.
No, well, yeah, that wasn't.
And by the way, I don't remember how we handled that.
If you partially write up,
you read the whole thing, update the block, and then update it.
Okay, but because in his example, what he's saying is that you go directly to write.
No, I think in that case we just write the partial block.
Where?
Depending on the stat, on where it is. I mean, but usually to the destination.
Yeah.
But if you overwrite a partial block with a full block, then you lose that, right? Or
No, but the thing is that you can specify in the bio that you can you want to just write 512 bytes,
yeah.
which is fine.
Okay. But after that, if you want to copy the rest of the block, because it has not been copied yet.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, that it will be a problem. But we usually, I think,
yeah,
the way
it's
implemented.
Detail. I think that can be fixed, right? I mean.
Yeah, no, no. Just to coming up with a tricky question in case that happens, you have an answer.
Yeah, you need to read, merge, and then write.
Yeah, but that's not the way it's done right now. The way it's done is just write that part, the partial I/O.
The partial I/O, but then can be overwritten, right?
Can be overwritten by who?
By the one that is being moved. Because the thing is that you cannot cancel the one that's
moving.
Yeah,
you cannot cancel it. It's complicated. Yeah, probably the way it's implemented is that you write, and then you read the whole thing. Anyway, yeah, you cannot do any of those optimizations.
Okay.
Yeah, you write the partial and then read the whole thing again.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, probably it's a lot more efficient if you read and then write.
Yeah. Hopefully that doesn't happen very soon.
Yeah, hopefully.
So the primary suggestion I had was about the ABLE theory.
Okay.
And to have some summary slide about the theory, and that ties back to what Ricardo had before.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a slightly different problem. But this, whatever my comment here also helps to address that problem. So
yes.
So there are two suggestions actually. One suggestion is to have a summary of what ABLE does, right, in a slide. And then after, of course, you can talk about the next slide what it cannot do, right? But that's a that's a different line. But what you need to do is to have backup slides that describe this theory, because some people may be interested in the ABLE theory itself. Right, so have those backup slides. And it's hard to describe the theory without the slides. And I don't want you to be stuck there with no slides trying to describe the theory. Right?
Okay.
And you already have those slides. Just put
them
in the backup so that you can bring it up if someone asks. Because I can anticipate someone saying, well, I didn't get any other theory in this presentation, right? So what is this theory all about?
You want theory here.
Exactly. So you have to have that ready. Because the title of your presentation is also may raise those sorts of questions.
Okay. Yeah,
and the other
sense.
Thing, it would be nice to have one slide where you talk about all the contributions in your thesis and say, okay, this is what I'm going to focus on today.
Okay, at the beginning, probably.
I'm not sure, yeah. It could be beginning or end, either way. The way is fine. Maybe beginning is better. But it would be nice to have that one slide to say, okay, here are the set of problems or set of contributions in this dissertation.
Okay.
And along those lines, it's also important in your list of publications to list the papers that have been submitted and the papers that are already are also in preparation.
Okay.
And in that list...
In the same list?
In the same list.
Okay.
And in that list, highlight the ones that you actually presented, that you talked about.
Okay. Well, that I did the presentations in the conference, is that what you mean?
No.
Oh, the ones that I talked about in this presentation.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
So have all the papers, and so that people know that there are papers either in preparation or submitted about all the material that you talked about in the talk, in your defense. I think that would be important. In your caching versus peering, that's where you show the results, right? But it would be good to talk about the workloads a little bit. Where you got them from?
Okay.
What are they about?
Okay, probably I'll have one slide about
what you have is FIU MSR. And that they are black boxes. We have no idea what they are. Right? It would be good to to know a little bit more about them, because the next several slides are going to be all about them, right? Okay, yeah, so those are my main comments. But overall, I thought you did pretty well. And you're almost ready for the final day. Just make a few changes and primarily the connecting that those two
parts.
That might need a bit of thought.
Yeah, today when I was reviewing the presentation, I also realized that I needed some connecting.
But at least there is one possible approach that you can do this.
Okay.
Couldn't it be just easier, you know, he ends up the presentation there and then shares a shabonus, you know, I have this extra data, I can share with you. That works.
Could work. It could work, but it's not a thesis then. I mean, it's sort of a thesis plus one bonus. And that's not how his dissertation is written, unfortunately. So, so for not to confuse the other committee members, it's better to have this sort of more comprehensive view of your work.
Yeah, I agree.
Bonus.
Yeah, the other thing is, I mean, if you're not going to, so there's one or two things that were created suspense, right? So, for instance, you said something like, write through and write back pretty much perform the same, but I'm not going to tell you any more about it. You didn't say that, but that because I was hoping you'll say something towards the end, but that never came. So, you can just stop by saying, we evaluated write through and write back caching policies and stop there. Then to create that suspense.
Yeah, I realized that in some points, but then I forgot to. Because in some slides I just said we evaluated this and this, and then in that I think that one is the only case where I.
If you have a chart, you certainly need to explain the chart, right? But if it's something like, okay, here are all the things that we did, but I'm only going to talk about A and B, don't go into the details of C, D, and E in any way, right? Or create questions in the mind of the audience.
Okay.
About them.
That makes sense.
I have a question, like whatever you showed on the connecting slides between the complexities of programming complexity and ministry complexity and ABLE. Remember the slide you had, like you put out one of the programming complexity and
Yeah, that was one of the
I was wondering, does your framework solve all of this, whatever you mentioned?
Yeah.
I think
but
that framework slide, that's the how to utilize ABLE by the administrator will address the second part. A similar slide, how a programmer would use the ABLE infrastructure, could be integrated with your architecture figure. I mean, at least you could talk about it in that context.
Yes.
So let's say a programmer wants to develop a new extension, then...
Especially on the right-hand block on the figure,
that's a good point.
Right?
Right. Because those are the, I agree, those are the two primary contributions of ABLE. And it would be good to make those more concrete. Yeah, good point. Was there any part of the presentation that was not entirely clear? It was all pretty clear, right?
I think if you spend a little bit more time on the charts, that would be great.
Yeah.
Okay.
The chart.
Especially the
chart. The one in the quarter sound. I had no idea what
that
was.
Okay. Yeah, probably will simplify that chart.
Use the chart and say the 3 minutes is the idea, you know, at the time. I don't know what increase.
Okay.
So you saw the 95th percentile increasing. No.
I have a special problem, but it seems I couldn't read the numbers either.
Because of the glasses, or?
Yeah, because I cannot see much.
No, I think once there's
a... But I try to guess what it says, and then listen to possibly what it's saying, but I couldn't...
So you can't read that there is 30 minutes written on the slide?
Well, he said it, so then I... No, forget about that. It's just that this and some other figures needed some information
about what it is. It's fine, but can you read that there's 30 minutes written on the screen?
No.
Wow.
Really?
Really? You can read it?
Yeah. It's very clear, I mean...
Well, you're closer, right? Now I can.
Wow, you need to come that close?
Yeah.
So, is there...
Without glasses? Without glasses, I cannot.
No, but with glasses...
With glasses, you should be able to.
Perfect.
Yeah. So you
you're without glasses.
But this is... close enough for me.
Okay.
Without glasses, I can read it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm all the way in that corner of the room, maybe I cannot. I'm not right, but I would guess the 30 would be blurred.
Many people can do it from the corner of the room.
Yeah, but I do have some power. You should probably go for an eye checkup.
Oh, yeah. Every time I go to Bolivia, I get.
You do?
Yeah.
And you're going to Bolivia pretty often.
Yeah.
So are you saying that
improve the degrees?
Right now, the good thing is that it is stabilized. Right now.
But it cannot be corrected with glasses.
No. A little bit. I mean, the final correction would be a transplant, cornea.
Corneal transplant.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, but my doctor says he does it every day and it's pretty simple. Doesn't sound that simple, but
get it done here in the U.S.
Yeah,
I highly recommend that.
Yeah. I heard about these bags from Pablo.
Hmm.
This is for optical things, which is
here. People are really scared, okay, about lawsuits, so they will be very, very careful. Not so in Bolivia or India.
Yeah, Bolivia. Well, the good thing in Bolivia or India is that you can get the best doctor in Bolivia at the price of the.
You could, but even the best doctors are not afraid.
Oh, yeah,
right,
yeah.
And they could make mistakes and get away with it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because eyes are very important.
Yeah.
It's very hard to survive without that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were a construction worker, it's fine.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, not fine, but it's not as critical.
No, it's not fine.
I don't know. But yeah, it's pretty bad for this profession.
You should try and get it done here if you can afford it, and I think you can.
They have insurance.
Yeah. I mean, you will be able to. So
you won't pay for yourself 100%.
Yeah.
The insurance is
100%.
No.
You won't pay 100%. You just pay a small part.
Yeah.
Like
20%. I don't know. Depends on the insurance. I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, those guys will have very good insurance. They can afford it.
Before I forget, it's Thursday, right?
Friday.
What time?
11.
Where?
2:12.
Clock.
Why?
Because there is this conference.
Wow.
They have everything booked.
Yeah, actually, I couldn't book the conference room. It's 2:43. Which I realize is probably better because the wireless is much better here.
Yeah.
So I can get to call much better the guys, the remote guys.
I mean, the infrastructure is important
for you. Oh,
by the way,
if you go to the, you may have it in the third floor, right? In the third floor conference room, there is a wired connection. Use that, the wired connection that's coming out of the wall, and then you need to log in using your FIU CS. Wireless page.
Okay.
Wireless.
Same way. Yeah, the same access.
That's weird.
We struggled with that. The problem was we never opened a browser and logged in using that page. We tried everything else. We changed all kinds of network IPs and everything. That's the one thing which we didn't try.
I think, apparently, if I use a secure wireless connection,
it's very good.
Yeah. that I did in my
even in the
you know what you could do what I was thinking is just using two laptops. So you could have, because that video usually doesn't work very well.